You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Tuesday, 30 June, we've got local private credit extension data due 8 a.m. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Jimmy Muyaha, I want to chat the NSPAS process result. So, I mean, is it all, it's still just Tencent, right? But, I mean, Takealot makes an adjusted EBITDA profit. There are other bits starting to happen. Media 24. Still massively loss-making. Stephen Joffe from Invicta results. Revenue split now 50-50, offshore local, and probably a good thing because local is tough. And then we're going to chat with Satrix on the importance of choosing the right benchmark for your investments. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headline, Bloomberg, the Supreme Court preserves Fed independence for now. Business Day, SA's automotive master plan fails dismally on localization targets. Government tenders for buses and motor vehicles will soon have to meet minimum thresholds. Morning markets, US was green, S&P 1.2% higher, NASDAQ 2.2% higher. The East is mixed. We have got Sydney up. Down rather a tenth of a percent, Tokyo up 0.9%, Hong Kong down 1.2%, and Tencent up 0.2%. Commodities are mixed. Gold futures down 3,978. Brent up about 30 cents at 72.83. Platinum down 1,576, and palladium higher 1,220. The Rand is 1646. Bitcoin 59,600. Top 40 opening call. Red open expected. 400 points, 0.4% down.
MoneyWeb Now. On the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Jimmy Muyaha. NSPAS process, Jimmy. I mean, this is still a lot of this really is Tencent. There is we can see the shift away from it. As I mentioned in the intro, Takealot is making an adjusted EBITDA profit. There are all the other bets, particularly around food delivery and the like. Your thoughts on the numbers, your thoughts on how they're going to sort of de-Tencent the business as a process.
Yeah, morning, Simon. I had quite the revelation looking at the numbers, yeah. And I realized that I didn't give this process enough credit when the unbundling was announced. Go back to September 2019, We got an IPO from Prosus, and all we thought was, this is just yet another shift. We've got the same company, it's a tech spin-off, all of the tech assets will go into the one. And what we've come to realize over the last six, almost 7 years, is this is what patient capital does when you have a $100 billion asset that you need to de-risk out of. Your Tencent holding to this day sits at around just under 25%, but they are still the largest single shareholder in Tencent, and that bet paid off over many, many years. But now you've got a new set of problems, is you've got a lot of exposure to one particular company, and how do you get out of that? And so what we've seen carefully executed over the last 6 or 7 years is a deleveraging and a de-risking out of a concentration asset that you didn't expect to do this well. And that's evident in the numbers. It's reflective in how the business looks today. The process of today is not the process that listed back in 2019. Yes, Tencent, as you mentioned, still a huge portion of that business, but clearly a direction is being carved out in terms of digital tech and AI-focused businesses within the process stable. And NSPAS slowly but surely is becoming more and more a holding company than anything else with its direct investment into Tencent. Look at the performance of Prosus. Just to see the impact that Tencent still has on that business. Without that business, a loss of $173 million across all of the other portfolio assets. But of course, that includes disposals of around $2 billion. It includes investments in acquisitions and all other moving parts. But with the Tencent stake, $11 billion in profit. So clearly still a big part of that business is Tencent, as you allude to. But this is probably the most efficient way to unwind out of an asset where you don't really have too many options.
I like to point around that. I hadn't thought of that. I mean, I remember in 2019, I was I was deeply skeptical, to be honest, but it's kind of working. And now we have, and I'm looking at process, we have what is a global tech player with South America, Europe, and China, big markets. It's only missing US on a single-digit PE. The stock's been under massive pressure. Surely this is something which we should be having a good hard look at this point and at current prices.
Absolutely. But again, this is the challenge with tech businesses, particularly tech businesses that sit outside of the US. We've seen what happens to what's called the Mag 7. We've seen what happens to what we now call as the Mangoes with the introduction of SpaceX. We're always favoring US tech businesses over any other tech businesses around the world. Tencent, as a global giant, is the size that it is, and it makes a lot of US tech businesses look quite small in comparison, but still undervalued as a stock compared to some of the US stocks. You and I spoke about this last week, if not the week before that, around the SpaceX IPO, as to whether or not that IPO had a lot more meat in it, or whether it was just an IPO for the sake of being a US-based IPO. I think if Prosus had listed in the US, we might be having a very different conversation around the valuation of that business. But it chose to list in Amsterdam, but at a very good, or with very good reason, rather, as to why it elected to go that route. The business knows why they went for Amsterdam and why they want to set up the business, or anchor it rather, in Europe as a global giant. Now, yes, it might not have the overinflated valuations that some of the US tech companies have, but when you're looking to invest in a company, is it not value that you look for? Is it not the underlying fundamentals that justify it? Is it not the fact that you're having 10 billion rand or $10 billion or almost of revenues across your portfolio assets and still raking in $11 billion in profits from the one asset?
I take your point. Absolutely. And I mean, kudos to them. It is in many ways working. We leave it there. That should be more. Always appreciate the early morning time. And our poll today on LinkedIn, I want to touch on the take a lot over Amazon. Are you buying at Amazon.co.za? Are you buying a take a lot? Maybe you prefer to go in store. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn. Give your money smoother returns for Stanlib Asset Management. The Stanlib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Turning to Stephen Joffe, he's CEO of Invicta. We had results of the year end March, revenue up 4%. Sustainable HEPS up 7% at 594. Cash in hand, 557 million rand. And the dividend up 9% at rand 25. Stephen, appreciate the time. Sustainable HEPS at 7%, but profit for the year down around 36%. What's that gap between the sustainable and the profit number?
The big gap is last year we sold a warehouse in Singapore. And obviously that goes into profit, not sustainable profit. And that really explains most of it.
No, fair point. You're not in the business of property dealing. I get that, absolutely. A weird sort of year. I mean, you know, I think the first line you talk around defined external pressures, internal reserve, rand strength was hurting bits. There's US trade tariffs, they maybe have gone. Middle East conflict, of course, arrived towards the end of the year in renewed challenges. It was a tough year, I imagine, for a business such as yours, particularly operating across a number of different markets.
Absolutely. I think last year there were two really significant events that affected everyone. And then, of course, you referenced the third one being the war. Mm. But the first one was the election of Donald Trump and the imposition of tariffs in the United States.
Yeah.
And that obviously had the effect of make it tougher to import goods from China into America. But, you know, those factory owners who weren't able to import their goods into America, to export their goods to America, they look for other markets. And those goods ultimately find themselves in other markets. And that really ratchets up competition in many markets. And we found that particularly in Europe. So it was very interesting in that respect. And then secondly, the dollar that you referenced, incredible weakness of a dollar, like really unprecedented weakness of the dollar. And as you know, we've been building up our non-South African earnings base now over 50%. Many of those businesses trade in dollars. So that weakness was also reflected in our results.
Yeah, we've been chatting around that 50% target for a number of years. My understanding is that you're actually there ahead of where you thought you might get to, but you are now you've got the South African operations, but you've got a significant 50% global operation as well. And it does mean you're at the whims of the currency. And like your point, perhaps less about the ZAR, it is more the dollar than anything else. How do you manage FX, or don't you? Is it just one of those things which will move and we don't have control over?
Yeah, we don't cover for dollar weakness. You know, we do cover all imports into South Africa, as you would expect, but we certainly don't cover all our US businesses for dollar weakness. So ultimately, when the dollar is weak and the rand relatively strong, it does reflect in lower earnings for South Africa's businesses like ours.
Yep. Spedlings is your UK acquisition, most recent. It's now in for the period, but it wasn't in for the full year, as I understand.
Yeah, it's an agricultural business, which makes its profit pretty much in the summer in the UK. And no one else seems to like my joke, Simon, but I hope you do. So we missed the 13th of July last year, so we only had it for winter. But I'm hoping that this year we'll get the UK summer and we'll make the profit now. Because up to now, we've just had like 7 months of really like no results, and it was summer to come. So it's exactly in line with budget. But unfortunately, you have to wait for summer to make the money.
I get you. And that actually makes perfect sense. So it's one of these businesses which is, I don't know, 4 or 5 months, everyone goes absolutely crazy. And then it kind of slows down. And you haven't got those 4 or 5 months yet.
Yeah, exactly. So we've had the slowdown period in our results that we reported on without yet having the summer.
I take your point. It's tracking, but it's all cost. It's no cream at this point. You're sitting on a lot of cash, 557 million in cash, largely debt-free. You've been doing some buybacks, but you also say you're hunting sizable acquisitions. You and I have chatted a number over the year, and you always say you get many of them. They just kind of don't meet the criteria.
Yeah, but we were interesting enough, we have some nice opportunity at the moment, and actually a nice opportunity we hope in South Africa. So we really are progressing through the diligence phase, and let's see what happens. You know, it's always, you know, too soon to call these things, and you have to wait until the end. Mm-hmm. But I'm hopeful that we've found like a meaningful acquisition that will really add some meat to the bone.
That's interesting. One of them might be local, because you talk around the deindustrialization of South Africa, and that hurts you because you've got a lot of operations in the market.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Every single time you read of a local operation closing its doors, you know, whether it's a metal plant or a rubber manufacturer, whatever it is, you know, it is no doubt going to be an Invicta Group customer. You know, we always have to, you know, work hard to find other customers to make up for the gap.
I hadn't thought of that, of course. I mean, if it's an industrial business, they're probably on your books one way or another. You talk around in the notes, talk around evaluation and implementation of AI-managed processes. Where might AI fit into a business like Invicta?
Well, the good thing for us is, like, if you need a bearing, you're going to need a bearing AI or not. So in that regard, we're a little protected, and I'm pleased. But, you know, there are a lot of processes that we can learn from. So, like, our order intake process or our procurement process or our sales fulfillment process and all that, I think we can add a lot of value by implementing some AI-driven processes. And that's what we're busy looking at now.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I'm using it in my little workflows, just things that it does for me that saves 10 minutes here, 20 minutes there, and it all then starts to add up. You mentioned the war. Of course, this was to the end of March, so it was that first month. The war now seems to largely be over, I suspect. Apparently, more meetings going to happen in Doha today. Was there much impact to your business, or was it a blip and kind of moved on from it?
It absolutely was a blip that moves on, you know, in the bigger scheme of things. But you know, even right now, with the diesel price up, like we do a lot of work with contract miners. And their biggest expense is the diesel price. Mm-hmm. So it affects these guys like on a day-to-day basis and really can double the operating costs like in a very short period of time. So we're very hopeful that the war does abate completely and the price of fuel and diesel comes down. And that will really like allow activities on the ground to really improve.
Yeah, it's that second order and diesel down, I think, some 3-odd rand, which is still a long way to go, but it's in the right direction. Stephen Joffe, CEO and Victor, always appreciate the time.
Let your money weather the storms with Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in the Stanlib Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio sub-managed by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Training now with Sia Nomoyi. He is Quantitative Portfolio Manager at Satrix. Sia, always appreciate the early morning time. Benchmarks, let's start, I suppose, really, really high level. Benchmark really is a tool that you use to kind of track how your own investment philosophy performance is doing relative to a section of the market.
Yeah, thanks, Simon. Yeah, you're quite right. I mean, when you talk about benchmark, that helps you to actually or guide you to build and track and evaluate your own portfolio. And it really is about setting clear expectations and managing your risks on your portfolio, and also just supporting accountability as well. So it's very important just to make sure that as a client or a fund manager, you are choosing the right benchmark based on what your expectations are. And it plays quite a lot of different jobs. Mm-hmm. The first one would be it's a way of measuring the performance and the risk as well. So if there's an investment committee that's sitting and looking at the portfolios that they've chosen, or you are a retail client that you are looking at your own portfolio, it helps you to just have a look at the performance and also evaluate the risk as well, whether it matches what you want and what that portfolio that you have is aiming for. And then if you've got a risk team or yourself as well, it outlines the market exposure the portfolio should actually be matching too. So it's very important.
And that's a great point you make there, which is that different users are going to have different benchmarks because of what we're looking for, what our expectations are, and heck, what our risk profile is and timelines. These are going to define how we pick that benchmark.
Yes. So, I mean, whether you're an individual investor or a fund selector, I mean, there's going to be a mandate that you create on your own. This is a portfolio that I'm creating and I'm doing it for, I don't know, saving up or investing for the next 2 years or 10 years. Mm-hmm. And there's clear targets that I want. So what is the money for? When do I need it? And what are the risks that I accept for that? So you set up that benchmark based on that, based on the level of risk that you can actually accept. And those are usually through volatility limits or maximum drawdowns that you can get from your portfolio to actually set those up and understand what the risk is. And then for institutional investors, I guess the benchmark should be things like liability aware rather than just asset only. Yeah. So it's very important to just look at that as well.
I mean, is there a world in which, and I'm thinking particularly for example, my own personal portfolio, perhaps. I've got a very sort of long-term sort of equity-heavy portfolio, but then I've also got my sort of spicy, which is, you know, tech stocks in the US and the like. Is there a world in which we might run different benchmarks? Because those are two different philosophies and methodologies that I'm thinking around.
Yeah, so I mean that's choosing the benchmark, I guess. And one of the biggest risks in choosing benchmark is that you don't match what you actually want as an objective. So you think about the long term core portfolio, and also you've got this moonshot fund that you have on the side. Or you've got this short term type of fund that you're looking at, and you're saving up for December, for instance. But you're choosing a more risky portfolio, which is not going to serve you. So that's also just something to actually have a look at when it comes to choosing the benchmark.
I like that. And it's also and it can also sort of bring in constraints. I mean, you could have, for example, you could exclude geographical areas. You could have currency restrictions. Mm. And that would be part of the sort of the tool of the benchmark to perhaps bring in constraints to the investment philosophy.
Yeah, so I mean, it goes into the fact of how you actually select the benchmark and what you look for. So there's a couple of things. It's the representation part and what that segment is actually looking for, it claims to actually look for or cover. So there's going to be broad indices or country specific indices that you want to have exposure to. So that benchmark would actually work there. And there's also very important the weighting methodology that the benchmark is using. So there'll be market cap, for instance, or equally weighting, or the exclusion that you're talking about, let's say X, an Asia or a world benchmark X, whatever country that you think of. And that actually helps in terms of choosing that benchmark. But also very important when it comes to the benchmark selection is the investability part as well. And back in the day, I used to track Africa X South Africa index. It tends to be a good idea until you actually have to buy some of those stocks that are in that index. And so the trackability part or investability part is quite tough. And just overall, the rebalancing rules of that benchmark are also very important as well.
Yeah, I remember, was it Maurice Madiba? I forget, he had that ETF which tried to track that. He had some proper challenges. It's a lovely index, but to you say, when you try and use it becomes a whole different story. We'll leave it there.
Exactly.
That's the nominee. He's a quantitative portfolio manager at Satrix. Appreciate the early morning. Cloud Atlas, that was the name of the ETF he was running. That's it for today. We were chatting with Horatio Naidu McCarthy yesterday from Allan Gray, how periods of uncertainty make investors more vulnerable to behavioral biases. We asked you how you're managing with your investment biases because, yo, it's been a year. In fact, it's been a lot of years. Half of you said it's holding on so far, doing okay. Rest was split between, yep, doing great, this is easy. And the rest of you saying, yeah, it can be a struggle. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobokle, Nicole Sabu, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow, going deep on the new Fed chair.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.